Welcome, everybody, into the ESPN FC studios for this, the latest edition of the show, alongside Ale Moreno, Steve Nichol. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you with us. We have a lot to get to, but let's start in the Premier League. Manchester City's trip to Crystal Palace didn't get off to a great start for the citizens. They were down just 4 minutes in, but relied on goals from Kevin De Bruyne, who scored twice, Rico Lewis, and Erling Haaland before Crystal Palace got one back late. Final score, 4-2. The stats say it was a dominant performance. What about our Julien Laurent? He joins us now. What do you think of the citizens today?
No, I thought they were very dominant. They conceded very early, of course, that Mateta goal that I think took them by surprise, and the John Stones mistake, both losing the ball and also I think in the transition defensively, it was not great. After that, I think they had like 78% of the ball or something ridiculous like that, and they had chance after chance. It was not always perfect, not always very fluid. And sometimes even they were under pressure. Guardiola was not happy in midweek after the Villa game, saying that in transitions again, they were a little bit too vulnerable maybe. So there's something that we see again then today. But overall, they were far too good for Crystal Palace team that, at times created something, but not enough on the whole game to cause more problems to a team like this City team.
Stevie, Kevin De Bruyne, the star man today with a couple goals. What did you see from him?
Brilliance. I mean, seriously, that the goalie, the first goal he scores, and it's huge. You know, when you go behind so early and you're away from home, everybody goes, oh, is it going to be one of these days? Mm-hmm. But when you have somebody with his sort of talent, that not too long, it doesn't take that long, and he gets an opportunity, there's only one thing going to happen. You saw the quality. Mm-hmm. And then from there, everybody kicks into gear, and then it's normal service resumed.
What about the City defence today? Jules seemed pretty impressed with their performance overall. You agree with that?
The City defence? Mm-hmm. The City defence, for most of the season, has been vulnerable to pace and balls in behind. And I think a lot of that is to do with them trying to hold a line. When there's no pressure on the ball, you cannot hold a line. You have to just take a couple of steps back and give yourself some room. Instead, they're not doing that. They're trying to be too clever. And they don't have anybody who's going to recover against anybody with pace. And we saw it in the first goal with Mateta. That has been their Achilles heel for me for most of the season. And it doesn't seem as though it's going to end between now and the end of the season. However, when you have players like De Bruyne and Haaland who can just change the course of the game in a heartbeat, then you're probably going to be able to compensate for the mistakes that you've been making and will continue to do if you're City.
What do you see from City today?
Well, obviously, offensively, it's one story. But defensively, it's concerning because we keep having this conversation about Manchester City and we keep expecting that they're going to get better. With the turn of the new year, they're going to get better defensively because this is what they do. They build momentum. Well, here we are in April and they're still allowing goals, and much more so than just allowing goals, they're allowing chances to teams that don't really create a whole lot of chances. If you've watched Crystal Palace play, this isn't a team that creates a bunch of chances every game, and yet they had clear opportunities today. And defensively, Manchester City, it's too easy to get in behind that back line. It's too easy to create opportunities against Manchester City. It's too easy to score a second goal. It's too easy to put pressure on Manchester City late in the match. The second goal, and when we talk about the struggles of Manchester City defensively, while it can be a structural and a group issue defensively as to whether they step or drop off, there's also a personal decision and, quite frankly, lack of performance from individuals. Rubén Díaz, as the ball is being crossed from the left-hand side, the attacking player, Edouard, started his run to the far post, as you do any striker. He started the far post and then loop it into the near post. It's a basic move. By the time he went from the far post to the near post, Rubén Díaz was now looking, turning, like, where'd he go? Where'd he go? And he flashes to the near post, and it's almost as if Díaz is somehow surprised that that's what's going to happen. And I would say it's just one time you say, all right, you kind of live with it. You fall asleep because you're winning the game easily. But it's a trend for Manchester City, and it happens regularly. And it's concerning because guess what? these things are going to show up at the worst time possible. I'm talking about Champions League. I'm talking about in a game that matters. And when we're seeing this close of a race in Premier League, it's going to show up at the worst time possible. At some point, Manchester City have to have some consistency defensively. Otherwise, they're not going to achieve the things that they think they're capable of achieving.
It's Crystal Palace today, but Jules, as the boys mentioned, on Tuesday, it's Real Madrid in the Champions League. How do you think the City defense will do then?
That's the question, really. I mean, the first leg at the Bernabeu is not going to be easy. We saw, remember what happened last season, certainly in the second leg. But this is different. And if you're Carlo Ancelotti, if you're Jude Bellingham, if you're Vinicius Junior and you've watched the game today, of course, you would have noticed everything that we've said. Those transitions where they struggled against Villa, they struggled today again. Like Ali said, they've struggled all through the season in those similar ones, especially without Kyle Walker, because the pace and the one player really that could recover from that is Kyle Walker, as Stevie was mentioning, and Walker won't be fit, I think, for Tuesday. So it'd be difficult for them. They will have to put certainly more pressure in midfield. And for that, who do you play? And again, we go back to the debate about Foden and De Bruyne. Is there room for both in this team against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu, for example? Do you go more solid and you put Kovacic next to Rodri? Do you put Stones next to Rodri? But then we saw Gvardiol today, who came off at halftime because he was that average in the first half. So this is really like for Pep to figure out, especially against Real Madrid, especially with the quality of Kroos, for example. If you don't put any pressure on Kroos and you play the high line, he's going to ping the ball over you for Vinicius, for Rodrigo, for Bellingham, running in behind all the time, all game long. Even at the Bernabeu, I don't think Real Madrid will mind leaving the ball to City to counter them like that. So I'd be very interesting to see what team Guardiola puts out on Tuesday night.
Stevie, what would you do if you were in Pep's shoes? Would you start them both?
Yes.
Really? It's not a risk?
Well, Manchester City are about going forward. Manchester City are about dominating games. And they don't really care that much about who they're up against, because they feel that if we're at our best, we can beat anybody. And so I think Pep's going to go and play his best team and absolutely play what suits him and what they normally do.
Is that the right thing to do?
The problem is, I think the one thing we're forgetting here is John Stones, when he plays centre-back and steps in the middle of the field, he looks so good and so elegant when he does that. The problem is, when the ball's turned over, there's another hole. There's another gap for Rodrigo or for Vinny Jr., whoever it is, to exploit. And the fact that Ali's talking about Diaz has not had a good season. Diaz has been bang average. And so if he's last man and Stones is stuck in the middle of the park, then that'll cause trouble. But I don't think Pep will change. He will go and try and play their best team. They will try and play the way they do, and they will try and dominate and win the game their way.
You know, you just argue against yourself there, right?
Jules, what would you do? I feel like you have a pretty strong opinion on this.
No, it's just I think Foden will have to play wide if De Bruyne starts, because Pep never plays them both as 10s. And De Bruyne was asked the question today after the game, because obviously he had a great game today on 3 days after Foden had a great game when KDB was on the bench. And he said, we very rarely play together as 10s. So you play Foden wide, I'm not sure that has the same impact, certainly with the ball or without the ball, than a typical winger, for example, or different options. So I agree with Stevie. I think he will play them both. You can't bench Foden, really, for a Champions League game like that. Although, remember last season, there was no Foden in any start of the game of any knockout stage game. So it might do that. You should go solid in midfield. I think for me, Kovacic will start. And you go back to a back four, maybe, with Rico Lewis right back, or Akanji right back, and Virgil at left back, Ruben Diaz and Stones in the middle. And then you put Kovacic and Rodri, and then whoever you want in that front four, Alvarez on the bench, whoever you want to put wide, Foden, Grealish, Foden, Doku, Foden, Bernardo, even, if you want a bit more control, and then De Bruyne and Haaland. So, but for me, Kovacic has to start that game on Tuesday.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Arsenal 3-0 winners away to Brighton on the day. The big controversy in this one ahead of Bukayo Saka's penalty in the 33rd minute. Stevie, did you think it was a penalty for Arsenal?
Absolutely not.
Jules, after the game, Kai Havertz said that he was proving the haters wrong.
All right.
Hey. Is he right?
Yeah, he also said, like, that's for you, Craig Burley, I think. But we didn't put that in the notes and they didn't show that to him. I'm kidding. I mean, he's been in great form since the turn of the year, since the November international break, really. I think I looked from since February 17th, so mid-February, nobody in the Premier League has more goal involvement than him. Goals and assists together. He's gone on 9, Cole Palmer is on 8 behind, and then the others. But nobody's been as effective as him when it comes to goals, scoring or assisting. He's been great. The fact that, remember, he was signed to play as an 8 to replace Xhaka, that kind of experiment didn't really work out. However, him as a 9 and not really playing as a typical 9, really. But him playing in that position has been working great for Arsenal for the last few weeks.
He's doing what Chelsea thought they were buying. Mm. What he's doing for Arsenal is what Chelsea thought they were getting when they initially signed him. That's what...
So we're giving Arteta credit for that?
Absolutely. Why?
He was getting hammered for the signing 3-4 months ago.
Why did he sign him?
Be kind of a tweener player that he can rotate around the front.
No. He signed him to play in the middle of the park. He signed him to play as part of the three on the left-hand side. Mm-hmm. That's why he signed him. Now, of course, on top of that, when you're signing him, you're going, well, if we have any injuries, if we have suspensions, this guy can play up top. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not ready to give Arteta anything because he didn't sign him to play centre-forward. But the fact is, when he signed for Chelsea, we all said he was a good player. We all said that we thought he would be the answer. He would knit everything together. He would get his fair share of goals. He would be this guy. As I said, he's doing for Arsenal now what Chelsea thought they were buying. But it turns out a little bit of a... fluke's the wrong word. Mm-hmm. But I'm not so sure Arteta bought this guy to play where he's playing right now.
We're going to have to check the tape on that. Yeah. I don't know that everybody was saying such nice things about
You're saying that he has stumbled into a solution.
Aye.
Okay.
But the thing is, it's given him a problem because I think most of us would suggest that up until about a couple of months ago, we're thinking Arsenal needs to buy a centre-forward. Yes. So it's kind of given him a problem. You know, do we save 100 million on going and getting somebody like Osimhen and think that this is the finished article? This is what Havertz is going to be for the rest of his days?
Do you think this is what Havertz is going to be for the rest of his days?
Well, I don't, because I don't think you can trust it. It's a great spell, but right now it's a spell. If he does this between now and the end of the season and keeps producing these numbers, then I think you might change your mind.
What about the penalty, Ale? Stevie didn't think it was one, did you?
I don't think it's a penalty either. And I suppose what the referee is looking at is the momentum of Lamptey is taking him into Gabriel Jesus. But he's making a challenge on the ball, makes a swing at the ball, and actually makes contact with the ball. Now, the follow-through ends up making contact with Gabriel Jesus. You could also argue that Gabriel Jesus is actually coming into Lamptey and actually generating that contact. Now, I don't know. I wouldn't go as far as to say what Stevie was saying, that if you have the ball, then it negates everything. I don't think everything, it's sort of, the totality of everything, right. I think it's a little too much.
Yeah, you break somebody's leg on a follow-through, we'll probably
correct.
See something. Right?
But I will say that in a challenge in which you are actually making an attempt to get the ball, mm-hmm. and you actually do get the ball, then what else are you supposed to do as a defender? And that's the part that I think it's confusing to me. I understand... I suppose that I'm putting myself in the position of the referee, and he's seeing the challenge, and he's seeing that in the follow-through there is contact with Gabriel Jesus. But we're ignoring a very critical part of it all, and that is the fact that Lamptey actually gets a touch on the ball and does what a defender is supposed to do, which is win the ball.
Mm. I personally don't blame the referee, because live it looked like a penalty. Mm. It looked like a classic, drop the shoulder, pass the defender, he catches you, penalty kick. So I don't blame the referee. However... Surprise, surprise. You've got to look at the VAR, because the VAR gets to look at it, and the VAR absolutely can see that Lamptey gets a piece of the ball. Mm.
Jules, where do you come down on this?
Yeah, I'm a bit like the boys. I was a bit watching you on television. I was a bit in between. I think the VAR and the referee, PGMOL and all of that, saying that, yes, there was contact from on the ball from Lamptey, but not enough to change enough the trajectory of the ball. Well, I think what it means, if there's not a foul behind, Gabriel Jesus still can get the ball and continue his run in the box. And I think that's what they saw. I think it may be a bit harsh, but if you look at the Brighton players, they don't really appeal. I mean, Dunk goes towards the referee. Even Lamptey doesn't really appeal that much. De Zerbi neither. So, I don't know, maybe even the players saw it differently. I was a bit in between, I won't lie.
Jules,
I didn't think it was a stonewall
Jules,
penalty.
I think that's only because
I thought,
live,
okay,
it looks
like
a penalty. Jules, I think the fact that that everybody's not sure. I mean, when you see it live, as I said, it does. It looks like a classic penalty, and that's probably why there wasn't so much coming from Brighton's end, as far as complaint is concerned.
Well, the VAR there is going to see the contact, and once you see the contact.
Yeah, but you're ignoring the touch on the ball. And what I'll say about the touch on the ball...
We've seen it called that way for the last 5 years in football. If you follow through, you're liable for what happens in the follow through.
I think. Oh,
I'll tell you what. Let's pack the game, man. Let's forget the game, man.
I think there's a difference there. The follow through. I think what you mean, Seb, is that yeah, you go and play the ball, but you go over in the top of the ball, and now all of a sudden you follow through, and in that challenge you end up committing the foul. In this case, the touch by Lamptey actually allows the trailing defender who was coming in support to be involved in the play. So what Jules is saying and the explanation of the PGMOL. Did I get that right, PGMOL?
Yeah, Pigmol.
Okay, all right. And their explanation loses validity and veracity because guess what? There is a supporting player that can now get into the play because the touch of the ball actually pops the ball up and it allows him enough time to now get into a position where he can challenge. And Gabriel Jesus is not wide open going towards goal at this point. So, look, I think the touch is significant enough to where you've done your job as a defender. You've slowed down the attacking player. Yes, in the follow-through, you can make the argument that, of course, there is a challenge of Lamptey that makes contact with Gabriel Jesus. But you can also make the argument, and I'm a striker and I'm making this argument, that Gabriel Jesus is going into Lamptey trying to draw a foul as well. And once you get lost in that conversation, you lose sight of the most obvious thing. Lamptey got the ball.
And that's why, forever and a day, the contact of the ball from the defender has always been the key.
Regardless, by the way, Arsenal were much better than Brighton. They win the game.
I'm glad it wasn't 1-0.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. In the end, it didn't make a difference as Arsenal picked up all 3 points with an impressive 3-0 victory. As we take a look at the updated Premier League title odds. Jules, Arsenal right now, 4 games in a row without conceding. They're rolling right along. I mean, this team is playing as well as anybody, aren't they?
Yeah, they're great away from home as well. They have the best attack, they have the best defence, they have the best expected goals for and against, all of that if you want. All the stats really are very good. But the fact is, the only team that have their own destiny in their own hands is Liverpool. Mm. It's just, this is the way it is. I mean, now we look at the table, but the table is not right because they have a game to play tomorrow. But like Guardiola said after last weekend, the team that is in front, the team that is 2 points clear of second and 3 of third, is the favourite. They have to be. And you can look at the schedule and home games, away games, and even that, I think, slightly favours Liverpool over the other two. Yes, Arsenal are playing great. Yes, they've been playing really good for some time, for most of the season, really. But it's all in Liverpool's hands, really. And unless they drop points, whether it's tomorrow or later or whatever, but if they don't drop points, they will win the league. So they are the favourite. They are the favourite because they're top of the table ahead of everybody else.
Since Jules mentioned Liverpool there, worth bringing up Liverpool and Manchester United Sunday at Old Trafford. And this is something that surely is making Steve Nicol very nervous. A unanimous choice that Liverpool will win. Yes. And the closest one is Ale Moreno at 2-1. Everybody else has Liverpool winning by multiple goals. Steve Nicol, how do you feel?
Bad.
Do you want to change your pick?
No. No, how I feel is how I felt about the FA Cup tie, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Whichever way you want to look at this game, Liverpool are by far the better side.
Okay.
Whatever way you want to cut it.
Yeah.
But strange things happen in football, and even stranger things happen for Liverpool at Old Trafford, regardless of how big of favourites they are. That is the only worry I have.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Because this is down to Liverpool. This is down to Liverpool. To me, this has got nothing to do with Man United. Man United could turn up and give as much heart and desire and commitment as he did in the FA Cup tie and not have enough. Because the fact is, it was down to Liverpool completely wasting their opportunities, and United, when they got the opportunity, struck pretty much every little morsel they got.
What worries you more on the run-in, this game or the game you were talking about yesterday, Everton?
Oh, here we go. The lean and the grimace.
Aye. Well, I'm going to say Everton, because I don't think Lightning can strike twice at Old Trafford the way it did. That would be my reasoning why I'm a little more worried about the Everton game than this one.
All right, well, make sure to join us on ESPN FC tomorrow, as we will be no doubt all over Liverpool's trip to Old Trafford as they look to stay right in line in the fight for the Premier League title. Let's get to the Bundesliga. FC Heidenheim hosting Bayern Munich. Bayern, all sorts of struggles. 38 minutes in, though, they take the 1-0 lead. Harry Kane.
Yeah, nice finish. Not his cleanest strike ever. Just onside. Half volley into the ground, past the goalkeeper.
7 minutes later, more from Bayern. Alphonso Davies, the cross. Serge Gnabry there to make it 2-0.
We just haven't seen enough of that from Bayern Munich. Somebody else than Harry Kane scoring goals. But of course, Bayern Munich is going to allow Heidenheim back into the game. The positioning of Dayo Upamecano, embarrassing.
Kevin Sessa makes it 2-1. A minute later, Tim Kleinstein makes it 2-2. What's going on?
Beautiful finish. Half volley as well. Jams it into the ground past the goalkeeper.
And he wasn't done either. 79th minute. Kleinstein makes it 3-2 Hoffenheim.
And how easy is this for Heidenheim? All of a sudden, it's a 2-1 situation. Kleinstein does well with the finish. 3-2, Bayern Munich. Full-on collapse.
First ever win against Bayern Munich for Heidenheim just last year.
Old school stadium, that, isn't it?
Yep.
How about that? What's Max Eberle saying? The board member for sport at Bayern Munich, newly into the job, quote, "We should all be a bit ashamed today. This is not the Bayern Munich that I knew. I was surprised at the lack of stability that I found at Bayern. A lot needs to be changed."
You should just have said, "It's not my fault." That's what you should have said.
Basically, I just got here. I don't know what's going on. Ale, I feel like we say this every week, every half week around Bayern Munich. It's like a new rock bottom, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, and heading into their Klassiker last weekend, some of the conversation was, and even some of our colleagues that we have Bundesliga coverage with, they were saying things like, you know, if you look at the numbers, it's not that bad at Bayern Munich. Look at the point totally. It's not that bad compared to what they were doing last season and the season before. It's okay. It's not great, but it's not bad. It's terrible. It's awful. The standard for Bayern Munich should be different, and this is embarrassing. And what you're finding as well is that there was this rhetoric, again, leading into their Klassiker, the narrative about how, given the fact that they'd announced that Thomas Tuchel was not going to be the manager after the end of the season, that had allowed some of the players from Bayern Munich to play with more freedom. with more freedom to express himself. And because of that, you're seeing a closer version to the best of Bayern Munich. Nonsense. Because I tell you what happens. When you know that's not the boss, that's not the guy, when things get tough, guess what happens? Huh? When things get tough, a team that wasn't all that together to begin with, and now this guy is not going to be the boss, everybody scatters. Everybody scatters. So when you get punched in the face, this team doesn't come together. They scatter. Mm. They get fractured, and the fractures get deeper and deeper and deeper. And therefore, you see a team that at times has no reaction, has a whole lot of give up in them, a whole lot of quit in them. And it's what happened today. Heidenheim, without doing a whole lot, they just work harder. They just worked harder than Bayern Munich. And that's what Heidenheim have done over the course of the whole season in Bundesliga. This, you mentioned rock bottom. This was close to that for Bayern Munich. I don't know what rock bottom is, because losing to Saarbrücken wasn't exactly all that great. Being humiliated against Bayer Leverkusen felt like that was rock bottom. Losing in the manner in which they did last week against Dortmund was awful. And the trend continues to go down and down and down and down. And it's not going to get any better anytime soon.
So Bayern Munich not going to win the Bundesliga?
Nope. Nine!
I guess they still have a shot technically in Champions League, where they're facing off against Arsenal in the quarterfinals. Jules, we know you with your Arsenal ways. Are you at all worried about facing this Bayern Munich?
The only thing really is that the second leg is in Munich, and a bit like what Stevie was saying with Old Trafford and United, and when you're home and all of that. The only thing you could say that, okay, let's see what happens at the Emirates on Tuesday night, and then the second leg in Munich. Really, anything could be possible, should be possible from a Bayern Munich point of view. However, this Bayern Munich side really have been bang average all season. And yeah, you can find now and again maybe some decent football. But even that, we haven't had decent football from them for a very long time. Maybe back to towards the start of the season, the 2-2 against Leverkusen in Munich. That was maybe the best game that they've had. Even more than the Classica, where Dortmund were down to 10 men early, all of that. So they haven't been playing great. They don't press well. I agree with everything Ali said in terms of no team spirit, no unity in that team. Even with Tuchel, there's just nothing. There's clearly a fracture between him and his dressing room anyway. I think they should have sacked him or let him go, really, when they decided that he would not be there next season. He was, in my eyes, stupid to keep him until the end of the season. It doesn't bring you anything, really. Let's be honest here. So it's been an embarrassing season pretty much from start, really. And I just don't see, when you see how well this Arsenal team is playing, and yeah, of course it's possible over two legs, anything's possible. But really, realistically, it would be very hard for them to knock out Arsenal.
Jules, from a Bayern Munich perspective, you look on paper and it's a bunch of good names, especially defensively, and yet they're chopping and changing all the time at the back. What do you think Tuchel's looking for there?
Well, it's really interesting, really, because if you go back to how this squad was built and what happened in the summer, especially January, maybe not so much, it's a difficult month. I mean, they signed Eric Dier, which really says it all. But anyway, Tuchel wanted a number six. There were a lot of people who decided at the club who didn't think that they needed a number six, like a proper six, like a proper defensive midfielder. They thought, hey, Kimmich and Goretzka can play there. They've played there for most of their career. They're great. Why don't you trust them? Well, he doesn't trust them because defensively, they're just not good enough. And he never got that number six. Whether that was right or not, it doesn't matter. Now we see, and we've seen all season, that they could have done with somebody really good in that position that would actually protect the back four far more than Goretzka and Kimmich or Pavlovic or anybody else that can play in that position. And what about the right back position? Because once you let Pavard and Stanisic go in the summer and don't replace them, and you're only left really with Mazraoui, what do you expect? So you play Kimmich, you play Leimer in that position. It's not their position. They don't like playing there. And again, your defense is completely unbalanced. And if on the left-hand side, whether it's Guerrero or Alphonso Davies are not at their best, and again, when you play Eric Dier as centre-back, you can't expect to have a very strong defense, I'm sorry. So for me, the way this squad was built was completely wrong from the first place. And if on top of that, some of your key players don't play at their best, which we've seen for most of the season, then you're in trouble.
Stevie, if one is the lowest and 10 is the highest, how worried are Arsenal about this Bayern Munich?
What number is a healthy respect?
Four?
No.
Five?
No, there's got to be... It's got to be a seven or eight for...
Really?
Well, it has. You have to.
Just because of the name on the front of the shirt?
If you treat Bayern Munich as if they're a 4 out of 10, then you're asking for trouble. You've, as I said, it's a health... Whatever that number of healthy respect is, that's where you hold them. Because if you don't, then you're opening yourself up for mistakes, not concentrating properly, all the things that can go wrong if you're not concentrated on the job.
There you have it. Bayern Munich, then, not going to win the Bundesliga. You know who is?
Yeah.
Bayer Leverkusen. Very little doubt.
I think so.
After today, they were away against Union Berlin. First half stoppage times. And Union Berlin going to go down to 10 men here as Gosens gets his second yellow.
Can't really complain. He's beaten. Kicks him down. The yellow card all day long. Stupid challenge if you're already on a yellow.
To be fair to him, he did not complain.
No.
He just walked off.
No.
So the ball's going to end up in the goal here, but it will be revised by VAR.
And they were initially checking for an offside position by Mainatli, and in checking for that, they stumble into this. Like Christopher Trimmel actually stuck that chicken wing out. And indeed, handball, penalty kick, Florian Wirtz, no issues, no problem.
He didn't blow the whistle before the ball went in the net, right?
No, he did not.
But why didn't he just give a goal?
Because Mainatli was in an offside position.
All right.
Okay.
Bayer Leverkusen, 16 points clear of Bayern Munich. They can clinch
the title. That's a lot, by the
title.
Way.
Yeah, you think?
It's over.
They can clinch it's the over. Title with a victory next Sunday against Werder Bremen. Let's get some more post-game reaction from the victorious Leverkusen side.
We never spoke until now about to win the league. But after this 90 minutes, we are ready to speak about the title. We know exactly... This is what you dream, like a player, like a young boy, when you grow, to win titles. But even more, to win titles at home. And we have a big, big, big chance next week against Bremen at home. With these fans here, but as well the fans in front of TV, to give them something more than special. To give them the championship. And we will do everything that next week we are the next Deutsche Meister in the Bundesliga.
Xavi. Another win, 41 games unbeaten, and as I think you'll know by now, 3 points away from the Bundesliga title. How does it feel?
Well, it feels amazing. You know, it's hard to put in words what we are doing, to be honest, for sure. We are so close, and we need to do the last step to wrap it, but so far it's pretty remarkable. Not just the results, the way we are playing, the way we are competing each game. Really credit and thanks to the guys. It's been a pleasure for sure.
Leverkusen then continuing on their historic run. As you heard, they're 41 games unbeaten across all competitions, still in the hunt for all three trophies that they started chasing at the beginning of the campaign. I mean, 41 unbeaten, Ale. What more can we say about this team?
Everything that we didn't say about Bayern Munich just now. And that, I think, that gives you full context of what Bayer Leverkusen have been this season. We criticize Bayern Munich and their lack of unity, of team spirit, of coaching, of front office decisions, player personnel decisions. All those things that we mentioned about Bayern Munich, Bayer Leverkusen have gotten 100% correct. The coaching decisions from Xavi Alonso, the tactical approach, the player rotation, the player personnel, the player acquisition that they have. Alejandro Grimaldo, who? Yeah, you may not have known who Alejandro Grimaldo was before this year. You know now. You know now one of the left backs, one of the best left backs in the world. And that's just one example. Victor Boniface, who? That's right. Victor Boniface, up until his injury, was one of the best strikers in Europe. And you go down the list of players who may have had difficulty somewhere else, they come to Bayer Leverkusen and there is a plan in place, there is a team, there is unity, there is order, there is organization, there is structure, there is performance, there is execution, there's 3 points at a time.
This team has everything right now in Bundesliga, and they have been like this since the beginning of the season. This is not a now thing. They have been significantly better than everybody else in Bundesliga since the beginning of the season, and it's only a matter of time until they win it.
From Leverkusen to never losing, 3 points away from their first ever Bundesliga crown. They can get those 3 points next Sunday again as they'll play Werder Bremen. Borussia Dortmund coming off that their Klassiker victory, taking on Stuttgart. 0-0 deep into the second half. Stuttgart on the counter. And Guirassy going to find the back of the net to make it 1-0.
Well, you got... You got three stooges standing there watching this, and Guirassy just strokes it into the net.
80th minute corner kick for Dortmund. Nico Schlotterbeck.
I know.
Oh my.
I know. Now, I'm liking the uniform. Yeah. That's the only positive thing I have to say. Nico Schlotterbeck, from my kind of range, goalkeepers are already laying down. No, that's right. Nine! No.
I think he said unlucky there, didn't he?
No, I don't think so.
Is that what it was? Borussia Dortmund, as they do, follow up the impressive win against Bayern Munich with a defeat against Stuttgart as we take a look at the odds for their quarterfinal against Atletico Madrid. First leg Wednesday in Madrid. Also on Wednesday, we got PSG against Barcelona. First leg in Paris, PSG. A heavily rotated PSG, we should say. Taking on Clermont Foot.
We're ever going to see Mbappe smile ever again. Every time we show PSG.
Maybe if they lift the Champions League, Stevie. Clermont Foot goes up 1-0 here through Habib Keita.
Yeah, I mean, he's a little fortunate. It's just a challenge. The ball could have gone anywhere, but it goes in the back of the net.
Luis Enrique perhaps begrudgingly going to Kylian Mbappe off the bench in the 67th minute for Kolo Muani in the 85th minute. It pays off. Mbappe to Gonzalo Ramos.
Give and go action. Hold up play from Mbappe. Good run in from Gonzalo Ramos. Good touch forward. Nice finish. Clean finish to the far post. 1-1.
PSG failed to win, but not a result that's likely to stop them from winning the league.
I don't think so.
13
I think they're all right. I think they're okay, Seth.
Over, your neck a little bit.
Second place Brest. As we take a look at the odds for the quarterfinal in the Champions League between PSG and Barcelona, first leg Wednesday in France. Jules, how are you feeling from a PSG perspective?
I don't really know what to expect, to be fair, because, I mean, there's obviously a lot of history between those two teams. They've played each other so much in the last 10 years. The remontada, of course, when Luis Enrique was on the Barca bench. Now, on Wednesday and the following week, when he goes back to Barcelona, when they go for the second leg, he will be on the PSG bench. It's Kylian Mbappe, of course, in his last season at the club, going to Spain, where he will play next season at Real Madrid. So there's so many narratives, so many little stories within this big story. And the big story is, as we said after the draw, this is the good side of the draw, because if you win this quarterfinal, then you play against Dortmund, and we've just seen, or Atletico Madrid, who haven't been great either this season. So the pathway towards the final is there for you. It's there for whoever's going to be the best in that bottom half of the draw, really. So it's a great opportunity for both of them. And from a PSG point of view, a lot will obviously rest on Mbappe. And Stevie is right. When are we going to see him next? Smiling. Well, maybe if he scores against Barcelona on Wednesday, that should help. But tonight was a... Don't think about tonight's game. He played the C team. We had some kids who were there. He let all the starters, all the superstars on the bench or coming on late, like Marquinhos and Mbappe, for example. It was just about not losing, and they haven't lost for 27 games in a row now in all competitions since the beginning of November. So they've got that momentum. But again, they can play great football, really good, and sometimes they're quite exposed and defensively in transitions again, a bit like for City, they're quite vulnerable. So there will be something there for Barcelona, who have been playing much better in the last few weeks, who will have De Jong in the squad, not Pedri, but De Jong will be there starting. I don't think so, but he'll be in the squad. So it will be a really interesting two games.
PSG against Barcelona, first leg Wednesday in Paris. So they'll be talking about that on the next edition of the Gab and Jules Show. Drops on Monday. Make sure to download the podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Drama in the Copa del Rey final. Athletic Club and Mallorca go to penalties, where Athletic Club wins the Copa del Rey for the first time in 40 years. Sanset with the goal for Athletic Club in regulation to tie things at one in the 50th minute after Rodriguez had made it 1-0 for Mallorca in the first half. In the end, Ernesto Valverde and company raised the trophy. Copa del Rey, you might think it's all about Real Madrid and Barcelona, but no, 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 no. We've had, count them, 6 different winners in the last 6 installments of Spain's domestic cup competition. Ale, I said Athletic Club deserving winners. Is that fair?
Absolutely. 100% deserved winner. Look, we knew that Mallorca, in fact, everybody knew the way Mallorca were going to play, that they were going to absorb some pressure, that they were going to go on the counter every once in a while, that they were going to depend on a set piece, but their game was going to be based on trying to frustrate Athletic Club. And that's fine. I have no issues if that's the way that you're going to play. My issue with Mallorca is that Athletic Club wasn't playing all that well, and Mallorca, instead of taking advantage of the nervous energy and the apprehension that Athletic Club had in the first half, instead of taking on that chance of going forward and perhaps seeing what could be on the other side, they said, nah, we're going to sit here deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and that just allowed Athletic Club, just by sustained pressure, to eventually force a turnover in a bad area from Mallorca. They go on and tie the game 1-1. From there, Athletic Club created a couple of half chances here and there. And Javier Aguirre then decided, you know what? We're really, really going to forfeit any sort of opportunity. We're going to forego any chance of going forward. We're just going to really deeply sit behind the ball with a line of 5, then a line of 4, and just Murici. And Athletic Club had difficulties breaking that down, but at the very least, they were attempting to win the game, not making a decision 10 minutes, 15 minutes into the second half to say, we're just going to go for penalties. I suppose that that's the way that Mallorca felt they had the best chance to win the match, but Athletic Club did everything they could to, at the very least, try to win the game, went to penalties, and in penalties, they executed better than Mallorca. Mallorca felt all the momentum going into the penalties. The fans were all about it. The players were all about it. We're all celebrating. We're throwing water all over each other, and this is going to be great. But you still got to be able to handle the pressure of the moment. And all that momentum stops when Manu Morlanes misses the first penalty. And then all that tension that you thought was an Athletic Club was now back on Mallorca. Mallorca couldn't handle that moment. Radonjic misses his penalty. Athletic Club were perfect. And in the end, as I said before, 100% deserved winners of Copa del Rey 2024.
Celebrations continuing in Seville. Let's get out to La Cartuja, where we'll join live by our good friend and colleague, Sid Lowe. Sid, can you give us some context, kind of put into perspective just what this title after 40 years of waiting means to the folks at Athletic Club?
Well, in a way, you saying 40 years kind of sums it up very nicely, but it's even bigger than that. You're talking about Athletic Club, who before tonight had won 23 Copa del Rey titles. This is the tournament that kind of defines them, defines their history, and of course as well, given the nature of Athletic Club, this is a club that only plays with players born or raised in the Basque Country, a tiny proportion of the Spanish population. It's a pool of talent There's 4.9% of the Spanish population. That's the limitations that they're playing with. And so what that means, of course, is that this isn't a team that realistically can ever expect to win the league title again, ever. In the post-Bosman world, it's just not going to happen. The Copa del Rey is their opportunity. It's their, the competition with which they feel a special affinity. They have got to 5 finals in this century. They've got to 6 finals since they last won it and didn't win any of them. So you have that accumulation of pressure, that you have that accumulation of tension, and also as well, in truth, the euphoria coming before this final, because in previous years they've lost it to Atletico Madrid, they lost it to Real Sociedad here, albeit without fans, their Basque rivals, and they've lost, of course, to Lionel Messi's Barcelona team. This time, for the first time going into it, there was a genuine sense that there's no doubt about it. They are favourites this time. And I think what that did is it created a degree of euphoria when they reached the final, because, of course, they'd knocked out Barcelona and Atletico Madrid en route. In other words, the hard part, in theory, had been done. But it also cranked up the pressure, and it meant so much for them. And I think that pressure, at times today, certainly for the first half an hour, was difficult for them to live with. And then the explosion at the end, I think, tells you everything about this. This is a genuinely unique, genuinely special football club that had gone 40 years without winning a trophy. To put that into perspective again, I know, look, we all know this, 40 years is a long time. None of their players, of course, have been born when they last won it. But all of them, because they're raised in the Basque Country, have heard about it again and again and again. There was a lovely line from Iñaki and Nico Williams in an interview they did with one of the Spanish papers this week, where they said, "We want to live the experience that we have been told about so many times." And now, of course, at last they have. To put it into perspective again, by the way, even the sporting director at Athletic Club wasn't born the last time they won the Copa del Rey.
Sid, we're looking at Ernesto Valverde lifting the cup trophy high above his head for the many fans who made the trip from Bilbao. It's a manager who was criticized so heavily during his time at Barcelona. What are they saying about him now?
Well, it's a little bit early to tell you what they're saying about him now, but I think there is absolutely a sense in Spain that throughout this season, when Athletic have played so well, and bear in mind this is a team that's still competing for a Champions League place as well. So this isn't just a team that's got to the cup final, that maybe got an easy run, that has been able to win against a team like Mallorca, who they really should beat. It's a team that is competing for a Champions League place. It's a team that hasn't been beaten at home since the opening day of the season when they lost to Real Madrid. It's a team that scored 7 goals in the 2 games in the Copa del Rey at home against Barcelona and Atletico Madrid. That's playing fantastic football. That's great to watch. And so I think there has been a sense this year of looking at Valverde and thinking, perhaps we were unfair on him when he was at Barcelona, but also, I think, putting it into context. And that context of what Athletic Club means to him, and how sometimes it's about being in the right place, and being in a place where they appreciate you, being in a place where they love you. This is his 3rd spell at Athletic Club, and I'm going to give you the line that I like the most, and apologies for this if it's not the line you like the most. When he came back the second time, there's a phrase in Spanish which is, segundas partes nunca fueron buenas. The second part, another, a sequel, is never any good. A sequel of a film is never any good. Part 2 is never any good. He came back the second time and he was told this. Second parts are never any good. And he said, well, Godfather Part 2 was quite good. That's a sequel that worked out. And now he's come back for a 3rd time. And I admit, it was me that did this. After that Copa del Rey semi-final, I said to him, did you like Godfather Part 3? He bottled the answer. He said, well, 1 and 2 were pretty good. We're going to try and make sure 3 turns out well as well. And, of course, tonight it has.
Sid, where's the bigger party tonight? In Seville or in Bilbao?
Well, that's actually a really good question. I don't know if you've seen the footage, but San Mamés Athletic Stadium is full tonight. It is full. This stadium is full almost entirely, maybe not quite, because you've got that one end now that's gone of the Mallorca fans, but massively, massively in favour of Athletic Club tonight. The two clubs have the same number of tickets officially, but of course the tickets through the Federation, the tickets through sponsors, the ticket through friends, and nearly all Athletic fans. There's around about 35, maybe 40,000 in the stadium. There is that many in Seville. So it's not just a case of, is the bigger party in Seville or in Bilbao? Is it bigger in the stadium, outside the stadium, or up in Bilbao? It's going to be huge. And on Thursday, they're going to have to wait until Thursday. There's been a word that people in Bilbao haven't dared to mention in the last few weeks. And that word is gabarra. Gabarra is Spanish for barge. When Athletic won the Copa del Rey in 1984, the last time they won it, they travelled down the River Nervión on a barge. 1.5 million people on the streets. There were people jumping into rowboats, into dinghies, into tugboats, into anything they could find and following them along the river. There were people clambering up the shipbuilding kind of structures and watching them from the roofs. And all the way through this year, but also in previous years when they've reached the final over this 15-year period, people have talked about, let's bring the barge out again. Let's bring the barge out again. And no one dared to do it. No one dared to even talk about it this time. Athletic have requested permission to bring the barge out. It's had to be renovated, as you can probably imagine, given that 40 years have passed. That, though, won't be till Thursday, but that is going to be, I think, a really kind of a moment of nostalgia, a moment of identification, a moment of belonging. I think that's going to be a big part of the party as well. It's going to be huge here. It's going to be huge in Bilbao. And I think in Bilbao, it will go on for more than a couple of days.
Break the barges out, says Silo. Ready for a party. Could you look up a flight to Bilbao there quickly? Or?
Am I going to get on the barge, though?
I mean...
Hey, but you'll have to wear a life vest.
No,
You should.
There's enough people safe, out there. Sid, final thought here. I don't know if you want to give a word to Mallorca, team that, like we said, 6 years ago was in the third tier and today played for the Spanish Cup.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And actually, I thought one of the nicest things, I don't know if you noticed it from the TV footage, but when Mallorca went up to pick up their medals, the entire stadium, the Athletic fans, applauded. And I think there's a real warmth, there's a real sense that what Mallorca have done is a huge achievement. This isn't a team that came through a really easy run. Yes, it's true they played lower league teams early on, but then they put three past Girona, who were top of the table at the time. They came through against Real Sociedad. And of course, they came through against Real Sociedad with a 1-1 draw and winning on penalties. So tonight, you get to that point at the penalty shootout and you think, it's a team, in theory, that should reach a Copa del Rey final. It's a huge achievement for them. It would have been only their second ever Copa del Rey. They won it in 2003 when they beat Recreativo de Huelva. So, yes, it's a huge achievement. I suspect, though, that's not a huge amount of consolation for them. They still actually have a relegation battle to come, so they still have things to fight for between now and the end of the season. They should be OK. They shouldn't go down, but they're not completely safe yet.
Yeah, there you have it. 6 points from the drop zone, our Mallorca, with 8 matches to play in La Liga. Sid, thanks as always for being with us. Great to have you. And it looks like your internet is just about to drop out, so you get time to say farewell.
Well, here you go.
Sid Lowe there in Seville, enjoying the party at La Cartuja. Stevie, how does that party, that trophy-lifting celebration, compare to some of the ones that you've been a part of back in your day?
Just the same, just as good. You never forget them. Mm-hmm. And you try and make it last as long as you can.
Don't want to leave that field, huh?
No, you don't want to leave. You don't want to leave. You don't want to leave the after party. You don't want to get up in the morning and have to get on the plane to go home. You want to be there as long as you can and celebrate as long as you can.
There you have it.
Because you know how hard it is to do it.
Mm. Yeah.
And so
it might never happen again.
Correct. And that's the thing. I think some players, when they win a title, they sort of take it for granted. It's like, it's always like this. Well, no, it isn't. Mm. No, it isn't. It's only one team that wins Copa del Rey every year. There's only one team that wins La Liga every year. And so to be able to win it and do it in the manner in which Athletic Club did, and the fact that it has been a 40-year wait, to your point, Stevie, you want to make this moment last for another 40 years. And obviously that's not quite the case because guess what? They'll be playing next weekend.
This is very much a Copa del Rey weekend in Spain. Next week, though, we get back into La Liga action, which, of course, we bring you exclusively here on ESPN+. Plus, on Friday, the action starts with Real Betis against Celta de Vigo. Some big games on Saturday. Real Madrid away to Mallorca. Barcelona away against Cádiz. And, of course, those two teams will face off in El Clásico on April 21st. I'll be at Disneyland because we're having a watch party out there in California.
All right.
El Clásico watch party, Sunday, April 21st. If you're out in that neck of the woods.
Mickey Mouse going
to
be around?
Make sure to stop by.
It'll be.
Maybe I'll put on the costume, you know? No. Never know. You never know what might happen at the
watch
party.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to you for watching. As always, it's been a pleasure. Don't go far. Extra Time. We'll take your questions from social media. Starts now. Hey there, everybody. Hey. Welcome into the ESPN FC studios for a quick edition of Extra Time alongside Stevie and Ale. I'm Seb, who has never once done the finger pointing thing that you guys keep bringing up. I don't know where you got that from. Like I said, we're short on time here in Extra Time because we got to give up the control room. Julien Laurent still with us as well. And actually, the first question is...
Why are you so angry, Seb?
I'm not angry.
I mean, we're playing with you.
What makes you think...
Playing with me. You guys are taking... What do they say? Are they taking the...
What makes you think that? What makes you think, oh, this is about you?
Yeah. Oh, who was it about, Stephen? Who is it?
All I said was, what makes you think this is all about you?
And I asked you, who is it about?
It's not about you.
We don't have time for this. Jules, first question to you.
About an old colleague of ours.
I know.
You think this is about him,
right? With Havertz becoming more of a nine, should Arsenal still look for the striker come the summer? Or focus on something else. It actually came on in the show. What do you think? Havertz good enough to be their nine for good?
And where does he play if they buy a striker?
Ooh, okay.
A follow-up question, Stevie. Yeah. Hashtag FC Extra Time.
That's another good question.
Yeah.
To be fair, I think they've looked at strikers. They're following strikers right now. Their recruitment team. I'm not really sure that even in January they were that keen on another striker. I think they had already moved Havertz from that number eight position. We've described it on the show where he was signed for, what he was signed for, to be more of a nine. And now that it kind of proved them right, and now that they kind of find something that is working, for how long, we don't know. Like Stevie said on the show, it might not work for much longer. It might work for longer towards the end of this, until the end of the season. We will see. I don't know how much money they will have available in the summer. I would think that they probably will look to strengthen another position than the number nine.
Did you see how proud Stevie was of himself for coming up with a follow-up question?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He was like, hey, yeah, right, okay. Follow-up question.
Wait, the journo.
Yes.
Journo over there, Stevie.
Good job, Stevie.
That's right. Journalism with a big J for Steven today. Stevie, for you, if you were playing today, which current Premier League player would you hate to face and would give you nightmares? Also, was there any in your time that you dreaded playing against?
I never dreaded playing against him.
Rafael really? Gordillo.
I remember this story. I remember this
Back
story.
From him.
Yeah.
He was... Well, and that night I played against him. I never actually played against him again. Although Liverpool played Real Madrid, he was on the other side. Mm. So I didn't actually face him. I faced him that one time, mano a mano, and I couldn't figure him out. After that, no, I never dreaded playing anybody. No.
So the second time you played him, they didn't say, we want this matchup again, and put him on you?
Well, the first game was Scotland against Spain.
Oh, okay.
Second
okay.
So game it wasn't Liverpool, Real Madrid.
Got it. And nobody from the current Premier League that would worry you? That you'd hate to go up against?
Well, if you defend properly, and you defend as a unit, then no, because you figure out what to do with certain players. Listen, if I'm playing against a guy who can do 100 metres in 9.5 seconds, I'm sending him inside to where all the traffic is.
Right.
If he's not got any pace, then I'll try and make it want me against him, and then I'll smother him that way. You know...
You can always figure out.
You figure it out, and that's why...
Rafael Gordillo.
I couldn't figure him out. I couldn't figure out whether I should let him go wide. I ended up bringing him in, because of the traffic, but at the same time, it was kind of a lesser of the two evils.
Did he actually have like a great game, or did you just struggle with him? Like, if we were to go back and watch tape, did he?
Yeah, you wouldn't have said he was like absolutely outstanding. Just the occasions when him and I had a personal duel, probably three or four, maybe, in the game, because we won the game and we were the better side. But of those three or four times, as I said, he had the upper hand.
Jules, pure sporting perspective. I'm not really sure what that means. Who do you see having a better career, Wemby or Mbappe? Jules, a big NBA guy.
Oh, the young guy.
Yeah, the young, skinny, tall guy, yeah.
I'm just very happy to start with that we have two, not just two Frenchmen, but two Paris-born and bred men to be one, the best player in the world in football right now, and the other one on his way to become the best basketball player in the world. He's not far from it already. It's hard to tell, really. I think let's wait to see at 25 where Wemby is in terms of what he's achieved in his career, what is 25 is how old Mbappé is now. See how well he's done with France and with the Spurs or whoever franchise he ends up playing for between now and the age of 25, so the next 5 years. And then maybe we can start judging. I think it's hard to compare two sports, two different sports, obviously. Obviously, in a very Parisian way, I would just love both of them to be goats in their own ways.
You know what I heard there?
What's that?
Wemby wants out of San Antonio. That's what I heard.
Wow.
I heard Jules saying if he goes somewhere else. Wow. I don't know, man. Jules has a connection over there. Right. He might know. He might
you
have some breaking news.
Huh?
Okay. Bench one, start one, drop one. Manager edition.
Mm.
Tuchel? Pochettino?
Oh, he's a belter.
Or Ten Hag? Jules, I'll start with you. Tuchel, Pochettino, and Ten Hag.
You said, I mean, Ten Hag, it's not possible to start with. You know that.
So okay, so he's dropped.
I will just leave him home. He's not even going to come anywhere near me. And then I want to believe in Tuchel. I've always been a fan of Tuchel. I know this season is not really going well for him. So I'll probably bench Poch and start Tuchel.
Wow. Ale, you agree? Is that the order you'd have it?
I mean,
look, Tuchel first.
Can I just say there are no good options here, first and foremost.
Yes.
Like, yeah. This is
the guy who was first lost to Heidenheim today.
would you not say at least you wouldn't mind playing for Pochettino? I don't think I would like to play for Tuchel. Ten Hag.
Yeah, well, that's another way.
I mean,
to
I'm work. Struggling for reasons.
Yeah, yes, you're really reaching
for
deep.
Reasons.
Because
yeah.
you could also argue, well, Thomas Tuchel has won a Champions League title, and so therefore, you know, what has Pochettino won? That you can go down that path of a conversation. But to your point, Stevie, I potentially, yes, would enjoy playing for Pochettino more than I would Thomas Tuchel. It's hard to make an argument Thomas Tuchel when he just lost to Heidenheim, and he has had the full-on collapse that he's had at Bayern Munich. I cannot pick Thomas Tuchel as my starter. But yeah, I agree with the Ten Hag approach and
definitive
point of view.
Drop.
Yes,
definitive
Ten Hag is
drop.
Nowhere near the team.
Stevie Pochettino, your first choice out of those two?
Yeah, for that reason.
Jules, has there been a more obvious instance of a player curse as Kane, a player who's expected to improve a team, but despite him playing well, this team starts playing worse?
Yeah, I thought about that the other day. I had the same thought as the viewer who sent the question. I struggled to find someone. The only one maybe that can come close is maybe when Ibrahimovic went from Inter Milan to Barcelona in the 09 summer, 09-10 season, for what, 60 million euros plus Samuel Eto'o in the other way, so a lot of money. And in the end, I think he scored 21 goals that season in all competitions. So first, individually, he did okay. It just never worked out. It was not obviously a great season for Barcelona overall. And to the fact that they also lost in the Champions League to Inter Milan, who went on to win the Champions League without Ibra. So maybe that's a little bit similar, maybe. But one like Kane, where the guy's been on fire pretty much all season, but his team being average, like we've said, apart from Ibra, I can't really find another one.
Yeah, the Zlatan Champions League curse, a good shout there from Jules. Nadim's interior decorator, for Seb. You forgot Luis Garcia and Casey for your TST ESPN FC team, and maybe your boy Hercules would be a better option than Ale, just saying.
For what?
So yesterday a question was asked, how would we build a 7-on-7 team of ESPN FC players for the upcoming TST tournament where they're playing for a $1 million prize?
Okay.
And I put my team together. You were on it.
Right.
I left Hercules out of it because he doesn't play anymore.
Right. Like,
he's not really an athlete at all.
And even if
he's on vacation in Hawaii currently right now, he doesn't even work. I don't know what he's doing. I did mention Luis Garcia. I forgot Casey. I did sleep on Casey, and I think I wanted to put Xhaka in goal.
Sure,
you said no Casey. Way on Xhaka.
Is Casey not older than Xhaka?
I think they're right about the same age.
Right, I'm going to guess that Casey gets down low about as slowly as
Can I put them both in the goal? Because they're both big bodies. Can I play with two goalies?
We could rotate them.
So, Jules, let me know what you think about this team. We had Luis. You were a big part of the team. Huh? Natum, Ale.
Oh, yeah. Hold up play, baby.
I was in there. Oh, Jurgen Klinsmann is maybe somebody we could bring into the team. Yeah, that could
if you
be
want
nice.
A benchman, benchman Mario for Melchior, not for Hercules.
We thought to broad. I don't even have to start. I can just kind of manage from the side.
Are you worth starting?
Well, it was my team, so in the fantasy, yes,
okay,
I was starting.
Right,
Jules, what do you think of our chances? Can we put together a pretty decent squad here?
I like it, man. How do we split the $1 million, though? Do we split evenly, or is there like more incentive, you know, for
Jules,
bonuses
Jules.
And stuff?
We donated to charity, Jules.
That's right.
We do it for the passion and the love for the game, Jules.
Amen.
Sorry, Ali, you're right. I forgot. My bad.
And that's exactly why we do extra time, for the passion and the love of the game. Don't miss tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Should be a good one as Liverpool travels to Old Trafford to take on Manchester United.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much I know.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.